Welcome back, all you new maniacs, to the Spinner Rack here at Season 5 of the Marvel New Universe Comics Podcast, the voice of the new universe. We're your hosts.
Andy with Sci-Force number 26, and...
Steven with Universe News. And the intro text.
The new universe. We'll let you do a few things.
I'm multi-talented. That's what I put on my IMDb page anyway, or will. The new universe was launched in 1986 as an imprint from Marvel Comics dedicated to a more grounded, less fantastic approach to comics. The original idea was the world outside your window with real-time progress. The new universe has changed a lot in 2 years, and now we are headed into 1989.
Woo!
Woo! Party like it's 1989? That's all right. The world knows about paranormals, and the U.S. government has started capturing and drafting them into the Army and CIA. Yeah. Pittsburgh has been destroyed, forming the Pit, and creating new, sometimes twisted paranormals. Only a few issues remain for each surviving series, and they all seem to be headed towards war.
War! I'm just echoing today.
Much like the world outside my window. With our podcast, you can follow along with us each week as we go through each remaining comic in the order they hit the spinner rack. Or just check out individual comics if you're really a stickler for that. And you already have a favorite. We have a website we may have mentioned once or twice, kickersinc.com, where we are... We'll post fun stuff, character galleries, and we'll include pages from the official handbook of the Marvel New Universe that were published sort of scattered throughout the books these last seasons. And if you still haven't gotten tired of hearing from us, you can head over to X and check out at Kickers Inc., where we'll update you on the shows as they come out and whatever, I don't know, new universe news there is.
Extra tidbits, right?
I'll try.
Something. Yeah, so this week feels like it's been a while, but we finally get back to Sci-Force. This is a group of paranormal teenage runaways. They've been avoiding both the American and Soviet governments, or trying to at least. But can they trust the few friends they have made? We'll find out. So the solicit for this issue out of Marvel Age was Sci-Force 26. Reporter Andrew Chaser has written a book that'll rip the lid off the government's plan to use paranormals. But considering the Sci-Force may be dead and Andrew's been getting threats against his family, can he bring himself to publish it? Hard copy, scripted by Fabian Nicieza and penciled by Graham Nolan, inked by Mike Witherby, which is a fun last name to say. I'm just going to say that.
Let's see. When did that hard copy started in 1989. It may not have been on the air yet, the TV show version of, under that title.
Spoiled that I was going to say that later.
Okay, you can just cut this part out.
You've been canceled.
We will also be discussing the bonus features, or at least the backup pages in this issue, which are a number of official handbook pages. And there's a little bit of universe news we'll touch on as well.
Yeah, a little bit of interesting stuff in those backup pages this time, I think. So, but yeah, Sci-Force 26, December 1988, probably when it came out, or you know, when it's listed December 1988, really came out August 23rd. So we are in our real-time universe, you know, getting to election season, getting to the very end of the year here. Well, let's do the cover and then we'll do the recap. The cover is kind of fun. Sci-Force logo. It's just a big old Andrew Chaser, pink tinted sunglasses, like a big poof of hair, kind of long hair swooping back.
I am the 80s, says Mr.
Right.
Chaser.
I never was a fan of those ties that don't have like the point at the end, like just like the flat, like 90-degree angle ties. I don't get it, but Chaser's up with that. But he's also got like purple pants that almost look like hammer pants, which would be very 90s. I don't think they're supposed to be, but they're just kind of like loose.
I did not look as carefully at this cover, I guess. Are
Yeah, this
these
is a
cowboy
great cover.
boots? Yeah.
And then we have like his book. Well, his book as the background, Power for the Praying, but it's P-R-E-Y, like you're being preyed upon, not praying, but it's also giving the prayer hands with a mushroom cloud. So super duper 80s kind of fun stuff. Maybe some bullet holes in it too. Is that what the black marks are?
Oh, maybe. I hadn't noticed those. There's little headshots of, I'm gonna say, Stassi, Wayne, Lindsay, and
No, it's got to be Kathy,
Tommy.
right?
Oh, you're right, Kathy. Okay.
They're not good. If you got the cover, they're pretty funky looking. Like Chaser looks all right, but yeah, the Cyforcers, they all got like weird mom and dad hair going on.
Yeah, it's, let me see. It's, there's a, I don't know, there's a background that's just a graphic black and red. I don't know. Swastika, maybe? I don't know. Could be anything.
No.
And I a quick look, I don't know. If power for the praying is a quote for something, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Also, like, it doesn't make sense.
I mean,
I kind of get it, like,
I think
something.
like the government is preying on these children, like trying to use their power.
Yeah.
Well, let's discuss at the end.
I don't know. His editor needed to work on a better title. Something a little catchier. Because it just sounds like a self-help book.
That's true. Yeah, it's Marie Kondo. It shows you how to clean your house and give you power for the brain.
Just nuke everything with a mushroom cloud. All
First, yeah.
right. Well, I mean, we might as well let Andrew Chaser recap us a little bit. The inside cover of the book. Is just more Andrew Chaser. Like there's a whole bunch of text pages throughout, which I actually kind of enjoyed for once. I usually hate them, but in this case, not so bad. So Andrew Chaser, freelance writer, investigative reporting is my specialty. And he talks about the White Event. He talks about how he first learned about this, paranormals and the Cyforce kids with Emilio Liccardo. Which was the Foundations guy that they had kind of brought in Cyforce a bunch of issues ago and did tests on them. But then, kind of ran afoul of Wayne and the guy got his brain messed up. But anyway, he says, from Foundations, I learned the existence of five paranormal teenagers. And paranormals were springing up after the White Event. He says Wayne Tucker, Kathy Ling, Thomas Boyd, Stassi, and Tyrone grouped together for over a year. As a result of their breakout from Foundations, they were deemed too dangerous to ignore any longer. Government contracted a group of bounty hunters, the Medusa Web, to hunt them down. Their sanctuary house in San Francisco exploded. That was Rod Stovall, but I think Chaser doesn't necessarily know that. Thinking each other dead, the kids were split into two groups and are now only learning they might all still be alive. This is, again, we kind of go through a couple months in this comic. So I think this is kind of early. So perhaps before the end of the last issue, even. And he says, for a lot of good, it'll do them. What'll they do? Get back together only to watch the world continue to fall apart? And God help me. I believe in their plight, I do, but what if their existence is only accelerating the disintegration of this planet's social structure? And what part do I play in all of that? Do I tell the truth? Do I tell their story to the public? Or do I hide the reality, hide the fact that the paranormals exist and this world is no longer the one outside your window? I like that line.
He said the thing.
He did. Oh, anyway, I can't. I thought it was a pretty good recap of kind of where we've been. Of course, Stassi died. She was killed by the CIA when the Psi Force sort of ill-fatedly raided them. And then from there, Rostvao crashed the party, or he was sort of already there causing havoc. And then they had a big showdown between Psyhawk and Rostvao, in which Psyhawk lost and apparently presumably died. And then we don't really know at this point what happened to all of the kids, except since they're the main characters, I think we're kind of assuming they're not all dead.
Yeah, this the only one who wasn't present there, I guess, in his physical body is of course Tyrone, whose physical body is in a hospital bed in California. The others we didn't see at the end of the last issue, and let's see what we get this time.
Let's see what we get. So yeah, the splash page, hard copy. And we've got basically it's Babel, the lead sort of guy of the Medusa web, sitting on this big old desk. The title of the story is Hard Copy, and he's got either like a bunch of TVs behind him with images, or just a bunch of portraits of all of his Medusa web buddies, including himself.
I'm just going to say portraits,
Think
but
so.
I forget why I thought that, but
I mean, it
yeah,
looks very flat.
we recognize most of a lot of the ones we've seen from the fights in earlier issues. I'm going to say Skybreaker, Backfire, Troublemaker, Babel himself, Potiphar, Thunderhead, Donnerkopf. And Electrique, who died, I think.
Yeah, looks like they picked up Artie, the cab driver from Justice, so we finally know where he is.
All right. And Black Lenore, who I didn't realize was a thing, but
who knows whether or not we will actually get to see these characters again or do something, but they're there, they're in head form. But yeah, so the dates are kind of interesting. So here we start March 24th. 10:42 a.m. So Chaser is basically walking into Babel's office, and he calls it the front doors of Pegasus Importing Company, which I assume is like the cover or the front or whatever. But he walks in, sits down, puts down Pulitzer, which is his cassette tape recorder that he has a name for, which is cute, right?
the cuteness of that has never really grown on me, I gotta
No,
say.
I like the moment with it later. But he basically just sits right down, and he's like, it's time to talk. He's like, well, I says, I don't find, like, unlike others you may encounter, I don't find your gall particularly endearing. And Chaser's like, that's the way the gall bounces. And he turns on, or no, Babel clicks off the tape recorder. It's like anything we discuss is off the record. So it's interesting that he's even sitting down to talk with him. But basically, Chaser tells some jokes. We get a little bit about the Medusa web, but Chaser's sort of interested in it as much as the Psi Force kids are involved. So he's trying to figure out, like what they want with the kids. And Babel says, those kids aren't actually particularly important. Chaser is like, that's a bag of bull and you know it. Everyone but my mother's been after them for over a year, including yourself. You're going to tell me they're not important? I came here for the truth. The truth? That could easily get you killed, Mr. Chaser.
You can't handle the truth.
Chaser's like, I'm too well known, too well connected. They can't touch me. And Babel thinks he's ridiculously naive for that. He says, your conceit won't deflect a bullet, nor will your ignorance protect your loved ones. So it's pretty direct. So he's kind of threatening him, but then he just tells him his life story. So he's like, all right, well, Medusa Web's been in existence since 1969. He mentions like a Russian KGB defector, which best I can tell was not a real person.
Oh, I forgot to look him up, but
I looked it
yeah.
up and it just came up, only this story came up,
Oh, interesting.
but yeah, so you know, he says a Russian KGB defector developed basically kind of got things started. It's like, for what purpose? And it's like, we're simply here to save the world from destroying itself. And he says, by uniting the world against one common goal, by giving the superpowers someone they will have to defend against together, one common purpose, one common foe. Chase was like, who's that going to be? He's like, why, the Medusa web itself, of course. Like, interesting plan.
He's very forthcoming, I guess, with the whatever the plan that's been behind the scenes and kind of driving these guys. A couple of points is that I guess the Medusa web being older than the White Event is interesting. The obviously the mandate was to kind of start things fresh, and so having it predate it. I think we talked before about it. It's kind of constricting to conspiracies or historical mysteries or something. If you have to be like, have nothing that didn't predate 1986. He does say also that these field operatives, some are paranormals, many are not. Couple of us were operatives before we became paranormals, which is only two in a million. So how many people do they have working for them? I don't know. But yeah, I it yeah the Medusa web is a very like interesting threat, but not threat. Happy to talk to you, but also keeping it secrets. I it's
They got
still.
kind of like the triple agent thing going on. Like, you know, sometimes they're helping you, sometimes they're not. And they always seem to be, if they're helping you, maybe it's because it suits their particular agenda. But
Like that. Okay.
yeah, there's an interesting text page afterwards with some images. There's like Jack Daniels and an ashtray and a burning constitution.
Not the Constitution.
Nope, Constitution be gone. and it's essentially sort of alluding to, it's cutting to April 6th, so this is later, but also includes conversation, so it's a little confusing. But it sounded like basically Medusa Web was playing it to make sure that the Psyhawk has this showdown with Rod Stavel. Like that's part of their game, is to cause that fight to happen. It says, what's it all boiled down to? Paranormal versus paranormal, and the King of the Hill gets to own the world. And what Carol Merrill is hiding behind curtain number three?
That's a Price is Right reference, I think.
Okay. Good one. I never would have caught that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the he these text pages do allow us to get a little bit more of what he sees as the moral dilemma of should I be helping these people? Shouldn't I be helping these people? Interesting. Once again, people are very concerned about the Constitution being burned. Shooting a unarmed female reporter and her cameraman in plain view hasn't come up again since then. So,
But the paper, that's what we were concerned. Turn the page, we cut to May 3rd, 1988, back in San Francisco. Again, we're following Chaser, and basically he gets in a cab, is getting ready to meet someone in a restaurant. And this is where he kind of finally picks up on the fact that he's definitely being followed. So like the cab takes off, a car that was on the other in the other lane kind of comes around. So he's sitting in the cab smoking and kind of noticing the car behind him that's definitely tailing him. And so it's kind of this fun bit where he like convinces the cabbie to try and lose him. So he's like, take a couple of unnecessary and unexpected turns. Yeah, $20 on top of the meter if you lose that car that's following us. And so, like, first he kind of lies and say like his wife's following her or a friend of his wife or something. And the cab driver kind of has fun with it and eventually gets stuck in traffic. Chaser pops out. He's like, oh, I lied. I'm not married. The folks chasing me are either FBI, CIA, or KGB. Not really sure which one it is this time. Ciao. Which is honestly kind of funny. So he hops on like the Rice-A-Roni San Francisco cable car, and presumably then like the car was his buy and he's lost this guy who's tailing him. So goes in, smoking a cigarette into a fancy restaurant. So the 80s, right? Can't do that so much no more.
I did check Castagnola's. It was a place. It only closed recently, actually.
Oh, bummer.
And yeah, it does. It's at Fisherman's Wharf, so it is at the end of the cable car line.
Oh, dang. Nice reference. There it works.
Very good. Yeah.
He says he's meeting Selena French, who I didn't really remember. Did you
You
remember
didn't remember her?
her?
Yeah, from issue 2 or 3, she was Colby
Dang.
Shaw's assistant. She
Okay.
appeared like one time,
Right.
and it was like, no, yeah, just memory hold after that. So yeah, very cool to her to come back.
Yeah, but as he walks into the restaurant, a guy stops him. He's like, Andy Chaser, I haven't seen you in how long it's been? Oh, since that sharp turn on Pacific and Mason, right? This isn't a movie. You're not a hero. Remember that. Have a good lunch. So the guy who was chasing him was like beat him into the restaurant. Notably, the guy who's chasing him looks exactly like Babel. Same build, hair, beard. except the only thing I could tell them apart with, which you can't tell right away, is Babel has a side part in his hair, and this guy has a middle part. So,
Okay.
it goes.
He, yeah, he's pretty nondescript. Yeah, you're right. He looks exactly like Babel with that tiny difference. So,
Yeah. So we get another text page with a cat, a plant, and a cross, and a basketball trophy, and a picture of Einstein. It's getting a little random here. But basically talks
just
about
some
like the
stuff I had laying around the house. I thought I'd draw that into the story. I don't know.
basically talks about like what happened with the sanctuary and so how it blew up, but then the fire department said it was a gas. Like a gas leak or a faulty gas main, which then put the blame on the sanctuary itself a bit. So like they were running into like financial troubles and a bunch of children died and that kind of stuff. And he ends it with, like, am I siding with the angels or the devils here? Is there a difference? Is it us versus them? It's like, will the truth about these children help break down the barriers of hate and suspicion that are already developing? And allow people to accept paranormals as people with a problem, or will such a revelation only serve to stoke the flames of fear and destabilize an already unstable government and social structure? Again, with the social structure. But I mean, there's a book called War coming, so I guess we have an idea of where we're headed here.
I gotta say, there's a couple of these these are like maybe mementos in Cyforcer's life. Like Kathy's cat, Benjamin, Wayne's earring cross, Thomas's little sister, who was a
Creepy
skeleton in
skull in the
his
dream,
dream, Tyrone's sports championship thing. Stassi, I guess, grew plants as
yeah. All
well.
right, yeah.
I don't know what
Michael
Einstein
Crawley
did.
was smart. And
Oh, yeah, there you go.
then, like, a superhero silhouette.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. I hadn't really thought much about it, to be honest, the first time I saw it either.
Yeah. So from there, we advance to June 24th, right? So we're moving along St. Francis Hospital in San Francisco. And Chaser is sitting at Tyrone's bedside, right? He'd been in the hospital since the sanctuary blew up and had never returned to his body because it was too painful to, basically. We find out that he was, basically keeping it going. So keep making sure he stayed at the hospital, spending his own money to make sure he still has care. And it actually doesn't take very long as he's just about to leave. Tyrone wakes up. So he's kind of like grumbling out some words like Stephen before he gets bubble tea. Thirsty. Like, oh my gosh. And, the nurses, doctors, or John Doe is awake. And he's like, Ty, you've been keeping people around busy for months. Yeah, he's kind of like says a few words, not a whole lot. Doctors start rushing in to kind of check his vitals. You can see, like, it's still on most panels, it looks like he still has burn scars. But he's moving around a little bit, not saying a whole lot, trying to move. And then it's not long before goons come in. So, presumably the same goon from the car, but in a white suit now. Maybe to blend in with the lab coats kind of thing. Just pops right in with another guy. He's like, doctors, please give us a moment. Chaser, don't move. This is, and the doctors are like, this is an outrage, but they just leave without much fuss. Which is funny. Like, they didn't show credentials or anything, but
The doctors always put the welfare of their patient before any sort of government intervention.
yeah. But Chaser reaches in his pocket. He's like, whatever's going on, Pulitzer should be in on it, right? He's going for his tape recorder.
This is not the best move I've ever seen.
No, this is like kind of reaching into the coat pocket with the opposite arm, the classic. And the guy says, he's going for a gun. And so he basically just tackles him to the ground, knocks his glasses off. The other guy puts a revolver in his face. He's like, no hardware. He's clean. He's like, so he was. And the guy takes the tape out and like pulls the magnetic tape out, like kind of spools it. Doesn't look like he wrecks it, just kind of enough to insult it. Chaser's thinking, wonderful. Crud for brains emasculates Pulitzer, and I lose my only way of proving any of this really happened. I kind of like that moment.
I was gonna say something else now.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
All right. Not enough bubble tea yet.
I gotta get working on my second cup here, otherwise I'll get nothing for you. Why am I doing all the heavy lifting here? Not enough bubble tea.
But basically, like, again, these everyone around
Oh, I
Chaser
remember.
explains themselves really well, but yeah, sure.
Oh, you know, if the FBI has always cleared any investigation of its agents when they accidentally shoot like a suspect, they'll be like, you know, they only investigate themselves, and somehow their people have never been, you know, convicted by themselves. So
Sounds like quite a coincidence.
strange, but so anyway, I wouldn't like act like I'm pulling a gun in front of an FBI guy, I guess is my point.
Good plan. Well, the guys are like, oh, we're taking Jessup with us. He's like, he is 18 years old, therefore he must register for the draft. I don't think that's how the draft works. Like, we wheel you out of the hospital, you've been drafted. But anyway, he also says, as a paranormal wanted on 6 counts of felony assault, Jessup is coming with us, period. And Tyrone is right there. He's like, what if I say no? Well, he kind of, what if
What?
I say no? Oh, sorry, that should have been your line.
We were both going for it there,
Yeah,
but
you'd be doing a great disservice to yourself, your country, and your family, causing yourself almost as much trouble as he is. And so he says, yeah, he's been writing a book about you. He's got a bunch of advance royalties, and Chaser kind of like, stifles at that. Then another text page.
he's if you're paying for someone's like ICU medical care for 6 months, you better be getting money from somewhere. That's all I can tell you. Yeah,
Yeah.
Tyrone, I think Sanctuary blew up in like November, and this is like June. So
Yeah.
New universe, when you're in a coma, you are in a coma.
Indeed. So our text page is the Constitution again, but not burned, but this time it's got a target on it and some bullet holes, like some hardcore metaphor stuff there. Yeah, it's basically like him, talking about the threats, right? So like, if I publish this, what are they going to do? Are they going to threaten all of the families of all these kids, my family, that kind of stuff? And it sort of ends with, I have to know where this administration and the coming one is headed before I can make my decision whether to publish this book or not, because either way, the wrong decision could destroy the foundations of this dying country. So this guy thinks a lot of his book.
Yeah, this, I think there were allusions to Jews in World War II in the previous text, whites in this helped blacks in the Civil War, and now he's gotten to
Paranormals.
again back to World War II and Japanese internment camps. So anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, July 5th, 1988. The meeting in the dark, in Washington, D.C. with the
My favorite.
leaker. We had met him before.
No one's gonna forget the leaker.
Leaker is CIA. He likes to tell me what he knows, and he always seems to know a lot. Also, he pees everywhere. I don't know why. Nobody likes to be around him, and he smells like urine. I added that part. But yeah, so, so they're meeting in the dark. There's kind of some interesting angles, like kind of showing them from afar. There's like a crane in the background and the moon. Give you my thoughts on the crane later, but yeah, he's talking and Leaker is basically saying like, this is scary, like you need to back off, you should probably stay out of this. Says ever since the pit, the whole country's been floundering. This draft, the idle threats against Russia, Panama, Iran, and everybody else is just to cover up the fact that there's no one in control. Then who are we doing this for? Bush? Dukakis? Dukakis.
Finally got a reference to Dukakis. It's been a while.
Right, and the guy kind of looks to the left, looks to the right, and says, his name is Philip Nolan Voigt. He's been covertly in charge of the country's Paranormal Affairs Committee. But the worst thing about this guy is blam, and
Bam.
he gets his head blown off. Well, he gets shot. So Chaser kind of goes flying. This guy is taken out. In my head, I was thinking like the crane, like ominously in the background, like maybe the guy's set up there with a rifle. Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
Or at least,
I
he's
mean,
being watched.
that's a good idea. I mean, DC is kind of a flat place, so
Yeah.
yeah. I want to
But there's
say
all this construction.
Panama was invaded in like 89 with under Bush one.
Okay.
We knocked over, it was one of these like strong arm guys or something, and we just sort of sent the troops in for
Okay,
some.
we need this canal here so you don't get to run your country.
Is that Noriega, maybe?
Okay, yeah.
That sounds familiar.
The arc falls apart here in this a little bit, but particularly page 18, top right, is really kind of funky.
It's been on and off, and this emotional state that Chaser is in is doing his portraiture no favors.
Yeah, and his hair. But yeah, he's freaking out, like, oh God, he's dead. What do I do? Oh God, they're crazy. What do I do? And like another bullet like pings off the ground nearby. Presumably they're not trying to kill him, is my guess. But he goes running. There's all this construction equipment, which I kind of realize is because of the big fight, right? Everything got all smashed up. Like a car whizzes by, like you can see like the headlights from behind him coming up. He kind of dives out of the way before getting run over. So maybe they are trying to kill him. It's like, oh God, they're coming back. So he goes to the archives building. He's thinking about, where do I go? Do I go to the FBI building? What if they are the FBI? Don't know what to do. But eventually he gets away and, not me. What did Leaker say? My mother? Oh, he's going to pee on my mom. What?
He goes down to the one of the metro stations, which honestly feels like you'd be kind of boxed in,
Yeah,
but he does.
unless you're gonna run down the tracks.
He does get a moment to remember his mother.
He does
For some
run
reason,
away
there's
and
a mention of the
survive.
like a there's like posters in there that don't seem to be relevant to anything. So I guess we'll skip on past them.
Yeah, like the John Wayne thing.
That's that.
Anyway, so yeah, so that night, perhaps, or the next day, probably that night, it's
I
King
think
George.
it's like a couple hours later,
Oh yeah,
yeah.
2:20 a.m. So yeah, that night. I says, "You can't say you can't go home again, but I didn't have a choice." So there's this huge, like, palatial mansion with, eight columns in the front and, huge open room. So yeah, he's rich, or his family is. Mother. And so mom comes down the stairs. Of course, he was worried that, they're after her too. And he's just kind of a wreck. She's like, "What happened? Were you hurt?" She's like, "No, yes." And so they sit down, and I guess they have a servant who kind of looks like a man, but
Very sketchy, but yeah, Judy.
Judy
I'll
is
assume
up
that's a
at 2:30
housekeeper.
in the morning and ready to make tea on a moment's notice. So that's the level of rich they are. So he sits down.
Anglo housekeepers, amazing. Okay.
It's like, "I'm in trouble, big trouble. I know too much. They might try to hurt me, try to hurt you. Who would
I
hurt
better tell
us?"
you everything, so they'll have to kill you too.
Right. It's like, "Oh, geez. CIA, KGB, FBI, probably even the PTA at this rate." That was kind of funny. Parent teacher. Oh, wait. Parent
Parent
teacher
teacher association, yeah.
association, right? In my head, I was thinking organization, but that wasn't right.
It's something else now, or at least at my school, so
Yeah.
I don't know, you.
Cheap labor. So he says, "This sounds like a bad Ludlum book to me."
Robert Ludlum,
Oh, okay, yeah.
The
The spice
Bourne
one.
Identity again, I think.
That's right, yeah. All right. So, I mean, Judy finally gets there with the tea. Like, "What do I even pay you for, Judy?"
Back to bed? You're done serving us? I don't think so.
Could you have dressed a little nicer? My son's here. He wants tea. They're all in, like, robes, because fancy. I need a robe to feel fancy, perhaps. I'm lacking that. But see,
You live out in the woods. No one will see what if you're wearing a robe or not.
that's
So,
true. I have more like a He-Man
Unabomber.
loincloth or something. It'd be a little more on
Red
point.
Flintstone sort of hide
Yeah,
slung over her
there
shoulder there.
you go. Flintstones. I saw little Flintstones yesterday, and Fred's a jerk. But anyway, back to Andrew Chaser. A page left. A page left.
Stay on target.
It's like, so Chaser's saying to his mom, "What would you do if I had to publish a story that could possibly ruin our lives, maybe even screw up the country completely?" It's like, "What? I mean, if it was me, maybe I wouldn't want my life ruined." But she's got some integrity. She's like, "More than it is now." It's like, "No, sorry, this is important. You look scared." And it's like the next panel, he just looks awful. Like, his tears, he's got either scratches on his face or like blood from the exploded head of the guy who got assassinated in front of him. But
Yeah.
she's like, "I remember when Samuel used to have the same problems." And she's looking at a big portrait over the fireplace of him, assuming was her husband, his father. "Anytime he had to run a story that could hurt someone, I never thought the truth could be so dangerous, Andrew." "Is it?" "Yes, it is." "And is the truth important?" "Always." "More important than all of this?" "I'm sorry, Mother." "It is. I'm sorry." Then they hug. He's like, "We'll do what is right, Andrew. History will judge the truth fairly. It usually does." Good luck with that, man. He says, "Oh God, forgive me." And that's pretty much the end of the book, but we got, of course, one more big old fat text page where his book came out. So August
Oh, wow.
2nd,
Okay.
1988, moving along. He says he had half of the book in the computer, rented a room. "I let the second half flow out of me like tears." And that's how most of my work does. It just all flows out like tears. But yeah, the book apparently hit number three on the Times nonfiction list. And there's a fun kind of quote. All right. So they wanted this thing out fast. Shanks, the editor or publisher, presumably said, and I quote, "Get the stupid thing printed and making some money fast before they decide to kill us all." But apparently it
Clever.
works. So he kind of goes on to say, putting it all out there, making himself kind of famous for it, then that's kind of protected him because if anyone goes after him, it's going to look really bad because he just published an expose. Says, hasn't heard from Ty since San Francisco. Imagine he's at Fort Benning now. That's where all the other paranormals were drafted to. Getting punched by the pit bull, maybe.
Get out of that bed. I don't care if you do need oxygen. It's time to wrestle.
He says he left the paranormal army and the draft stuff out of the book, and left out about Ty surviving Psyhawk's death. I just figured I owed him that much. It says basically he's hiding out, and it's maybe it's time to write another book. I keep thinking, who is Philip Nolan Voigt? And I keep thinking I should find out.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun dun dun.
Voigt, I think has a H in the previous page 17 when the guy's talking, which
Oh,
I think is incorrect. So he spells it correctly in this text page.
yeah. Of course, if you're not as steeped in the new universe as all of us, Philip Nolan Voigt was the head of the clinic, who was kind of sort of mind controlling all the paranormals to do his will. But we never were exactly sure what he wanted to do with them. And then he had a big throwdown with Randy and Dave where, he stole Randy's power because he can steal people's powers but make it stronger, and like turned into the big purple or pink glowing antibody, and then he kind of like popped and disappeared. So we don't really know what happened to him, but it was totally left open to be not dead. So
Yeah, he's all we got is a notice in the new in the Universe News pages, issue or two back, that he was running for president, which was
right.
already interesting. And now he's apparently behind the scenes in DC somewhere with this Paranormal Affairs Committee. Very interesting stuff. Even more dangerous for Chaser to go after. Yeah, we have the a different, sort of slightly different version of the cover here on the last page, or at least minus these floating heads,
No
which was
floating
redundant
heads.
to me.
Let's save those for Starbrand.
So yeah, I like that he rented a room in Baltimore and just like tapped this out. People do like their thesis or something. Just
Yeah.
he's got I think this is always the way in fiction, even though these people are professional writers, they always sort of fudge the timeline of how long it takes to get something like this published. Like an actual a full book I think takes more than a couple weeks, but okay. Yeah, he's they have the New York Times bestseller list at the bottom of the page, and if you look really carefully, you can kind of make out what a lot of them are.
Yeah, some are hard to read, but
I think it really it seems very accurate. Like they just photostatted last week's thing in there. It's
yeah.
this thing Bruce Chatwin and the nonfiction. Scott Turow's Presumed Innocent, that was always famous. Bonfire of the Vanities, Generation of Swine, Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking, that's always pretty famous.
Yeah.
Love in the Time of Cholera. So, yeah, very interesting issue. This it had a lot of ambitions, I'd say. The part of the thing it seems to be just keeping the mystery alive of like what happened to the kids,
Right.
sort of
But not totally leaving us hanging because we know Tyrone is back
At least
finally.
Tyrone, yeah. So that's good. I understand the sort of purpose of that. It's a little, I mean, it was pretty relentless the last couple of months there. And honestly, if you look at the timeline, this is like how I spent my summer. It covers about 6 months of
Yeah, March to
and
August.
yeah, and it really, looking back on season four, it seemed to be there was a lot of stuff going on at right after the pit, you know, at like New Year's-ish. And then this big fight with Rodstvow and Psyhawk, that's in early April.
Right.
And things were happening at either one of those points, but like the two or three issues of Psi-Force right before that were just like days before it or something. So you know, this is like, okay, there was more going on that year. Other things in other places, and here's Chaser going behind the scenes. I think we'd sort of said in early days of the new universe that, you know, having a someone sort of digging around and probing into this would have been interesting. So here we go.
Yeah. I have to say I was kind of dreading this issue because there was Andrew Chaser on the cover and I found him mostly annoying in all of the previous comments because he was always like trying to be really cool kind of stuff. But I think having him here kind of vulnerable, like running for his life, like he starts off kind of confident, but he's also like trying to help the kids essentially. So he's a little more like on our side a little bit, but yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think it kind of worked, even like his dumb jokes and the Pulitzer recording device thing. Like, I was into it.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with it. I think that like the text pages and stuff display a certain level of ambition.
Yeah.
It's the sort of thing that was, you know, following up from Watchmen, maybe that people were a little more free to try things like that.
Right.
This works out pretty well. You can sort of insert things, gives him a little bit more of insight into him and his motivations and all that. And this moral dilemma that maybe we as the reader don't, you know, we sort of naturally sympathize with these kids and all the paranormals and everything. And but he's, you know, he's sort of imagining the potential conflict of the future in which, you know, we enslave the paranormals or
Yeah,
we
there's
fight the paranormal.
a whole lot of like the fabric of society is ripping kind of stuff.
So, okay, I like that.
Yeah.
Overall, yeah, I was pretty happy with it. I didn't know what to expect, honestly. I'm kind of open to stories like this. Kind of things kind of going side, you know, getting an outsider point of view. And yeah, this it was not painful. I gotta say again, probably Peter David's jokes are a little more painful most times than
Lately.
lately. Sure. Maybe everyone kind of goes through these phases,
Yeah.
but this was decent. Again, a lot of references to local and restaurants and things, and you know, who knows why.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun little tidbits to look up to, which I always appreciate as the doing the podcast thing.
Yeah,
Although
have
the
you found
leaker died, right? I mean,
ah.
one last leaking out of his brain pan, I guess. For the leaker.
It's a lot like Creep and Crud last issue or two.
We had the giveaway a little bit from the Marvel Age annual of kind of like where things are going, which makes me think it's not going to be Voight in Psi-Force per se, but he would have been a cool foil for the Psi-Force kids too, to be able to like take their power and throw it back at them stronger kind of thing. Like that's a challenging thing to work around, so but
Yeah.
likely not to be, but still would be kind of cool. I think it's just like a lot of world building. But Nukin or the Pits.
I will give this a nukin. I maybe B plus at
Yeah. I mean,
least.
it's got a mushroom cloud on the cover. It's got to be Nukin,
There you go.
right? I'm going A minus. I enjoyed it. I don't know why. I don't have a lot of backing to why I thought it was that great, but maybe just because I have we did those recaps and I've been itching to read something.
Yeah, that could be. It's a it gives me the confidence that, you don't have to be telling a paranormal fight story every issue, and the rest of the new universe could also, take a breath and sort of look outside the world outside their window as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, let's take a look at the other stuff we had going on this issue. It's a jam-packed as they've been since the 19 issues.
Yep.
Official handbook pages, we have Babel. His real name is Greek.
Fame Panagitis.
Thame Panagitis? Panagitis? I give up.
Babel.
It's Babel, currently the field leader for the Medusa Web Mercenary Organization. He's Greek, date of birth. He's about 40 years, 42 now. Talks a little about his background. He's a actually a, kind of an academic, PhD in history and military history. And
You know he's a bad guy. He's got an MBA.
from Columbia too.
Second-rate institution, I say.
He's they go into a little techno babble about his paranormality, which is that he can interpret and speak in any language. They do sidewise mention that he does speak in over 15 languages fluently without the aid of his parability, which is kind of funny.
I don't even need this power.
Why do I even have this? Yeah, it's like Night Mask went into, his parents were into dream research, so of course he became a dream paranormal. So
Yeah.
Babel was constantly learning new languages, and then he just got a parability that could do it for him anyway. So
Yeah. Cheat.
says he's an excellent leader. I guess we, if we'll take a second to one of the concepts that was brought up that I was kind of saving for discussion was where they say this Medusa Web plan is to both gather the paranormals but then be the enemy of the paranormals. Doesn't it seem like you could at least form two secret organizations and then like say the other one is the bad guy? So at least you have, you know what I mean? I mean, why do
Some
you?
1984 kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, as it seems silly to literally tell people, oh yeah, we're doing this and we'll be the fight that you get through or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Questionable plan. We'll see if anything comes of it. And
We'll
then in the
see.
end, like the in. There's a peculiarities section where he said he's sort of critical of and concerned with his own participation in the Medusa Web's goal, right? So like whether he kind of goes through with it or not is a little bit in question, I guess.
Moving on to number two, we have Daemon Dusha, who's a Russian member of the Siberian Project, I guess member of Krasnaya Soljetsi, so whatever, Red
Something.
Sun, their paranormal program.
You notice he's wearing a Psi-Force tank top?
Oh, nice. I don't know why Dusha, like one of the websites that like categorizes and like lists characters, came, list he is featured prominently in there, so I knew this name existed, but it didn't mean anything to me until the like last issue. And yeah, it was seen previously in like a mask and a straitjacket
Yeah.
in the
Yeah,
Siberian
wearing some
Project.
crazy gear. So here we actually get to see is like a blonde teenager.
He is maybe, they say, born in 76, so he's only like 12, 13, very young kid at
Yeah.
this time. And seems to have a like a very strong power for igniting the oxygen in the atmosphere. And then sort of sculpting the flames into, I don't know, shapes that he can control.
Probably nobody wants to listen to us argue about how igniting oxygen makes no sense.
Very boring conversation about the activation energy barrier to having to whatchamacallit, dieradicals. I forget the
Dang.
conservation of
You're giving me
spin or
like
something
bad
like that.
flashbacks to our like cumulative exams in grad school.
Exactly. We
Tyler!
both of us had to take a whole exam on that. That was very difficult, but
I think he might have passed me by being nice.
and so yeah, we have a, you know, they talk a little about douches mental problems, although that's a little harder to understand. And they say that they had taken him into the field, the Soviets had taken him to the field, and he was uncontrollable in combat conditions or something. Like we said, he's like 12, so.
Yeah, there's a neat little picture of him like maybe throwing and surrounded by flames, like and maybe trying to grab Rostov.
So we'll see if that's a future that we haven't seen yet. Since official handbook pages are, you know, get clip art from whatever is laying around the bullpen. So,
Yeah, I assume this is like kind of like cool foreshadowing, like then you don't have to introduce these characters too much in the next book where we'll presumably see them. So here we kind of like, here's five new guys. All right, we already know them a little bit.
let's hope. So Shvotnaya, who is a female, even though she doesn't wear a top, no one noticed because she's looks like she's a yak person or
Yeah.
something. She's also pretty young. 73 puts you in 15 or so at this point,
Yeah.
and is a child who manifested some paranormality where she became like animal like and apparently killed her family accidentally and has been sort of losing it mentally ever since.
Yeah. So she willingly allowed herself to retreat into her animalistic existence, resisting attempts by the project psych staff for her to maintain a semblance of human thought process. So it's like kind of retreating into the animal form. Just kind of weird and kind of neat.
So we'll see what that's like. And then we have Silatochka, who is, I'm sorry, we've got actual translations of these things. So Daemon Dusha, the demon within. Shvotnoye is just animal. And Silatochka is horse point. He's an older gentleman, mid-30s.
Kind of dressed like a 1970s sci-fi character, like he should be in Logan's Run or something.
Yeah, he's got a jumpsuit and a big head, so they talk a little about he's like a mechanic. He's pretty normal Russian citizen, and then he got this power paranormality of exploding things from within, sort of the Michael Crawley, if I
Oh,
understand
I
his
forgot to
book.
look this up. Psionically expand the Masonic binding of atomic matter at the molecular level. I feel like, should I know that word? MESONIC? Like, that doesn't sound
Meson
familiar.
is physics. I mean, it's
Yeah.
like there's quarks are baryons, and mesons are like, instead of being three quarks, they're two quarks. And then you have leptons are like lighter particles, like electrons and neutrinos, something
Yeah,
like that.
okay.
Yeah, this is just blah, blah, blah. I've...
Yeah.
But yeah,
Listeners, you can tell
the.
who did better in chemistry grad school. I
You're
was
the
giving you a
professor, I.
compliment.
It's fine. Very, very, You're too kind. So he's a trained mechanic, so he has a understanding of the structure of things that allows him to blow them up even better. But he kind of
Basically
hates.
stolen Michael Crowley's powers.
Yes. He kind of hates the Siberian project that the but they are threatening his family. So getting a lot of that going around here.
Yeah.
See, we Americans are so much, but no, we did that with Tyrone just 2 pages ago. So yeah, everyone's
So
hate. And
his
we
powers make him the most formidable member of the Russian Word Attack Force. Quite
Yeah, everyone.
possibly one of the most powerful paranormals known of. I mean, we did have somebody with the Star brand, but okay.
Yeah, everyone's kind of oversold here a little, but they do explain his look as his cranium has become slightly enlarged as a result of his paranormal abilities and enhanced brain capacity.
He's not quite a Star Trek character, but he's getting there.
It's on his way. The last one is our friend Skybreaker from the Medusa web again, who slightly modified. I don't remember him having kind of a skull mask before, but
He's all pouched out 90s style too. Like this might even predate, like, I mean, this definitely predates Cable, right?
yeah, I think it's we've been feeling the 90s-ness for a while now, and we are just
Yeah.
it's come a little earlier than I expected, honestly.
Skybreaker is super 90s.
I thought the new universe would be like, just stay with mid-80s style, and like the 90s have arrived by now. It's
Yeah.
interesting.
It's kind of cool though. Like, we have a paranormal, he can fly. What do we do? Give him a gun, right? Like, now he's like half unstoppable, right?
It's yeah, he's got
All these flying superheroes just like flying in and punching dudes. That doesn't make any sense. Drop a grenade.
he's well armed, yeah. So it's got a good description of everything, telemetry, well, the various weapons he carries. And he's kind of apparently he was kind of a sketchy dude, like a mercenary before he got powers, so he knows the black market in London and all this stuff. So a British bad dude.
Yeah, a lot of details about his weaponry too.
Cool.
Mark
So
Hazard would be proud.
hopefully we will he was alive when last seen, so hopefully we'll see him under combat conditions before long. That kind of sums up the official handbook pages we got. Then we
Yeah.
got a few house ads. Semper Fi. I did grab a couple of back issues of that.
Negan or the Pits.
Even darker than the Nom.
Oh,
Amazing. Yeah, the only story I read so far was set in World War II, and this group is Marines is infiltrating a island held by the Japanese. I mean, they fight to the last man, and it is not pretty. He is like stabbing cooks who are unarmed, like
wow.
chasing them down and killing them so they couldn't get away stuff. And it's like, not glamorous at all. Ad for the Marvel Masterworks, which were maybe just starting to come out at the time.
Yeah, it looks like the second volume.
We have again, Suicide Is Not the Answer as the New Universe house ad. Evolutionary War seems to be continuing. The covers of the other books available this month. I think we got the, yeah, we didn't get the what's coming next month cover, which is always kind of a waste, but
Still kind of looking forward to it, but
yeah, so we'll see when we get there, I guess. We just have this month's ish covers, including, weirdly enough, last month's Star Brand, which the number on it is 15 instead of 16. So that's a little.
lost an issue somewhere.
Oh, yeah, the
Don't forget our burnt constitution.
Yeah, we have the burnt constitution and Universe News just has a profile on Chris Ivy, who was, I think, the anchor of this issue, but I think we're out of
We'll
time
handle
to
that
talk
one in
about.
another cast.
We'll talk about him later. And the official timeline of the new universe only goes through August 5th and August 6th. This has been going on for like 6 months, and they've gotten like a week past the white event.
It's pretty weak, guys. Give us some more dates.
Honestly, I've been a little like, come on, guys, speed it up. Covers the first issues of Spitfire and the Troubleshooter, Justice Number One, and Psi-Force Number One still. Yikes. I was kind of hoping that would be like better for, planning out the how the first steps of the universe went. I want to say the back cover is an ad for the Inferno crossover,
Oh yeah, good old Inferno.
which is amazing to me. Like, there's several attractive female characters in there. Mark Silvestri, best poses, but the Goblin Queen has always been like fan favorite. Madeline Pryor's costume in this crossover is like
Couple of shreds,
famously.
a boot, some boots and a cape, basically.
Yeah, the under boob, I guess, is the unusual feature there. By the way, Sim the demon on the cover there. I don't know if you remember Cerebus the Aardvark, the independent comic.
I've seen it, I never read it.
Apparently, this was a little in joke between Claremont and Dave Sim, the creator of that this demon is kind of dressed like Cerebus, and they call him Sim, which Dave Sim was the creator. So
Gotcha.
there's a little bit of a joke amongst the creatives. Anyway, it's coming out, and that it's it. As I recall, it's a fun one. I haven't gone back and read it in forever, so
It's a little up and down.
I'll it's a lot of stuff coming out at the time.
Fighting
Anyway,
Daredevil fighting a demonic mailbox and stuff. It's a little weird, but it's all right.
sounds like fun. That is it for the Psi-Force for this issue and this week's episode, though. Next time, our new universe checks in on our displaced paranormals and with a cast of thousands, DP7 with number 26.
It's now the size of a mountain. It's ravenously rampaging through South America. It's the horrifying Fanaleech. Ooh. The CIA is sending a contingent of DP7 of DP7 reinforced with the new paranormal Chrome, to somehow stop it. But how can anyone destroy a creature whose need to consume has made it virtually all powerful? Flesh is written by Mark Gruenwald, penciled by Paul Ryan, and inked by Danny Bulinotti. Perhaps you should have just napalmed it, but we'll find out.
You have military hardware, CIA. Don't pretend you don't.
Drop some people to punch it. Suicide mission, I tells you. Yeah, this
Why are
sounds
you in
interesting.
South America, family? You were in Bennington, Fort Benning, Georgia, an issue ago.
Yeah, they dropped it on Panama.
Yeah. That's actually not a bad idea. Well, do not forget you can find us over at our website, kickersinc.com, and you can always email us, newuniversepodcast@gmail.com. This has been the voice of the new universe, and we will see you back at the spinner rack.
It's your universe, idiot.
It was only supposed to make a buzzing noise.
Every molecule's a quivering. Just talk.
Do me a favor. Take a couple of unnecessary and unexpected turns.